Welcome all once again to Duel with an episode 159. I am joined this week by Martin.
Hi.
Daniel.
Hi.
And Jason.
Hello.
Who I'm surprised isn't hungover in a ditch somewhere.
I'm not Chad.
I don't know if Chad gets hungover. I don't know if he ever sobers up for that. But neither here nor there. We took last week off because I have no idea where you folks were. And we're back this week to talk.
You know where I went.
Yeah. But we're back here to talk about all the great news and games that have come out in the past, I guess, 2 weeks. And it has been a pretty hectic 2 weeks for new games and alphas and betas and werewolves, oh my. So I actually want to kick this off with Daniel because I'm really curious to hear more about Evolve.
All right, so I have been playing Evolve, the alpha.
Oh, that's funny, I haven't been playing it. Sorry, just had to get that bitterness out.
Well, you can play it.
And,
I have already played it at Gamescom, so...
Yeah, and I've also been playing the pre-sequel, and as I speak, I'm currently soloing the raid boss because... they didn't put a lot of effort into balancing the characters in this game, clearly. So, Evolve, they're running the big alpha as this is being recorded. By the time the episode goes live, it won't be up anymore. I don't know about PS4 owners. I don't know what's going on with that. So, Evolve is a new game from Turtle Rock, which is the guys that originally made Left 4 Dead and Counter-Strike Source. After Valve bought the company, and then they decided that they were going to leave and do their own thing again. And it's very, very similar to Left 4 Dead. So the gist is that there's four people, there's one monster, and the four people have to hunt the monster, and that's basically it. And aside from that, there's not a lot of gameplay to evolve, like... the four people each has a class, so one's a medic who has a heal gun and an ability which is a heal wave, which has a cooldown on it. The medic also has a sniper rifle that can mark out, can cause weak points. So if other people shoot it, they do more damage, and there's a trank gun which slows the monster down and points it out. The assault guy, he has a like an electric gun which can attack multiple things at a time. Has an assault rifle, which is just an assault rifle. Has a mine which arms itself after a while, and a personal shield which lasts for only like a short amount of time, but can block anything. There's the trapper, which has a big ass like shield which you use to contain the monster. I don't know what other abilities she has, but that's the most important one.
The pet is the other important one. And you also have, like, little traps you can shoot into the ground to basically... they are like hooks that can hook onto the monster.
Yeah, okay. And there's also the support, which has an orbital, an orbital airstrike. He has a laser gun. He has a shield projector, which you use to protect teammates... and aside from that, there's the monster who the idea is you start off at stage one and you have to go out, you have to go around the map and you have to eat things in order to get certain buffs and to get to stage three. And stage three is where you're at your most powerful, and every time you go up a stage, you get skill points and you can gain abilities like you can throw a rock, or you get extra armor, or a couple of other stuff. And the structure of the game is simply that it drops the four people in, it drops the monster in, and the four people have to find the monster and kill it. And the monster has to do whatever he can to kill the people. And obviously that involves some kind of preparation. And I just find it to be dull. I just, like, after playing each class, like, once, you understand how you're supposed to, like, play as them, and you just go through the motions of, okay, I'm playing as Assault this time. I just got to shoot things. There are other dangers in the map, which you have to, like, the monsters that, the things that the monster eat, they can harm you as people, but as long as you're not stupid, you can just avoid them. And it's just, I don't know, there have been cases where the matches have lasted a minute, because the person who was playing the monster wasn't particularly intelligent about his planning, and we found him and we killed him.
Have just you by been the monster?
I have, and it's obviously harder to be the monster, but if you know how to prioritize your targets, if you get to at least stage 2, and you prioritize your targets enough, it's not even that hard to kill the people. I just don't understand, like, maybe it's because everyone's new to the game, and, like, as people play the game more, like, they get more skilled at it, and the games become more interesting, but it's just, like, you pick off the healer first, because she can basically get anyone up, and then you go for Daisy, because Daisy's going to revive people, and then you go for the guy who can project your shields, and then you might be low on health then, but then you can take your damage dealers out, and there's nothing that he can do about it. I don't know, it just feels...
You'd be surprised how many people can't grasp such basic concepts.
Yeah, you know, you just have to... make sure that you don't get yourself caught on the map, because if you spend too much time getting caught in the environment, then that will screw you over as the monster. Otherwise, you just pick targets appropriately. You pick the most annoying one that's keeping people alive first, and then the person who's keeping them alive second, and then they're screwed. And, I mean... my biggest complaint is that you spend way too much time in the lobby. You spend more time in the lobby than you do playing the game for the most part. And, you know, it's just so much waiting in the lobby, and I can't believe... I just feel like quitting because I can't be bothered to wait anymore. But aside from that, I don't think it's terribly interesting, and I can't see any longevity in it at all. Like, the game's going to have more than one monster, and obviously it's going to have more maps, but...
how many monsters are in the alpha? Is it just the one?
It's just one.
I thought you could play both.
No, it's just the Goliath.
Sucks. I didn't even like the Goliath when I played it. I only liked the Kraken, to be honest.
Well, what's the difference between the two, since you failed?
They would have different, like, fundamental attacks and different abilities when you level up, and I assume that they would probably get different buffs when you eat different things.
The biggest difference is that the Kraken can fly.
That's a huge difference.
Are there only the two in the
four? No, there's going to be a third one in the final game. And I think you get the fourth one if you pre-order.
Yeah, that sounds... See, not to get into tough on this again, this is kind of stupid for an online-only multiplayer game.
Oh, yeah.
To segment
your audience from the get-go. it already sounds like a very limited game, and you just say, okay, you can get three, but if you pre-order, you get the fourth one. Like, yeah, I've said this before, it really does sound like it's so dependent on everybody else for your enjoyment that, like you said, if the person playing the monster is terrible, it's a really short and unfulfilling game, and if your team's not coordinated, I assume the monster can wipe you out pretty easily.
Yeah.
So it sounds like the worst part of Left 4 Dead without the good balance to it.
Yeah,
and I also hear from the alpha, and I could be wrong, I don't have a system of fate, is that they don't really take time to explain anything in this game.
They give you a short video the first time you play a class to describe the fundamentals of it. I mean, for the hunters, you don't really need to know anything apart from the fundamentals, because, you know, you prioritize targets on your shield and your heals, you know, you make sure you get your trank on the monster so you can follow it, and stuff like that. But it just seems to be just so basic, and I don't understand how anybody would, like... I mean, the concerns with Titanfall were the amount of content that the game had, and I think that, like, this game, Evolve is going to have that, like, even more than Titanfall had.
Yeah, since it's only one mode.
Yeah, it's only one mode, as far as I can tell.
Have they hinted at anything else besides that? Because it does seem like it get old... Like, there's no single-player component, there's no, like, I don't know, like, maybe four monsters.
I've played the demo for, like, 2 hours, and I'm already bored of it.
Yeah. And I told you before, I would not be surprised if, like, the final map count, it's, like, something from 10 to 15, which seems to be the industry standard for multiplayer modes, and that's going to be old really fast if you only play on one mode. I mean, Titanfall had multiple modes, and that map count wasn't enough.
Yeah, and the maps aren't even that interesting. In Titanfall, I would disagree with that. I think Titanfall, the one thing that Titanfall didn't need is maps, because the maps are fine. But the maps in there's two maps, I think, in the alpha, and they just kind of blend together. They're both dark. They're both jungly bits with some industrial bits, and I don't see any longevity in it at all, which is kind of disappointing. But the game looks nice. It looks really nice, and it runs really well on my machine.
I thought you played well.
Smart, I remember.
Yeah, it's CryEngine, so it looking nice is not a surprise. I'll tell you what, though. Why do the view models take up half of the screen? Like, they are gigantic, and there are games that have had big view models, like Battlefield Bad Company 2, for example. But these are huge. They don't need to be that big. I don't know. Yeah, so otherwise, I have been playing Borderlands the Pre-Sequel, and I've basically done everything there is to do in that game as one character. It's Borderlands 2, but not as good. The quests aren't as diverse, the writing's not as funny, the writing's not even as good, even if you take out the non-funny bits. There's less content overall in the game than Borderlands 2 had. The changes are kind of superficial for the most part. It's nice being able to sort of get the low gravity, but that's only because I like having floaty jumps in games anyway. You can tell because I'm a massive Halo fan.
You're a big Fnatic fan.
Well, I guess in a platformer it's kind of different, though. They've added laser guns that are overpowered, like... Most of the laser guns that the game gives you are better than most other guns in the game, despite what the stats might be, which is kind of strange. And they don't even do as much, like, backstory filling in as you expect them to do. Which is really weird, though. There are some things that I thought that they would elaborate on. Instead, what they elaborate on is, oh yeah, you know, remember that Jack sends robots down by shooting them from the moon base. Well, this is why that happened. Like, we don't care about that. It's not something that anybody wanted to know, really.
That's usually the problem with prequels in general, though. A lot of the stuff people don't want answered.
Yeah.
Mitochondria X or whatever.
So I mean, if you really have to play Borderlands 2 again, but you don't want any of the same story, then by all means buy the pre-sequel because you won't be disappointed. But if you don't like Borderlands, this is not going to convince you because it's just more Borderlands. And if you're just sick of Borderlands, but you like it anyway, then this probably won't convince you either, because it's just more of the same. Then there's more DLC to come, so...
So what you're saying is, unless you're a diehard Borderlands fan, you have nothing
else
to play right now.
Unless you're like me, and you have nothing else to play, and you have 400 hours in Borderlands 2, then by all means buy it. Because you're just going to get more of what you want. But not otherwise.
Okay. What about you, Martin? What have you been playing?
I, like you, have been playing Bayonetta 2. Actually, I finished Bayonetta 2. And I really liked it. That's a really good character action game.
Really good character action game.
I don't think I have played one this good in a while.
Well, Platinum don't release games so often. So.
Basically, I have not... Well, basically, I've not been playing a good one since Metal Gear Rising.
It's from Platinum.
Yeah. And before that, I guess, the first Bayonetta. did Devil May Cry... No, Devil May Cry 4 was before Bayonetta 2.
Yeah.
First Bayonetta, right?
Yeah.
It's... I just think it's a really fantastic game.
A fantastic story.
No, that's something I wanted to say. But I just hate the story and the voice acting. basically all the characters except Bayonetta.
I don't get the story.
Oh, that's why I hate it. It's absolutely aggravating. But this is not how you tell a story.
Well, I don't know. Bayonetta 1 wasn't any different. I couldn't follow that story for crap either.
Bayonetta 1 wasn't any different. I just thought maybe they would learn. But no. This is just Japanese developers doing the typical gibberish storyline, just like with Final Fantasy 13, for example. When nothing gets explained and shit is just thrown at the wall and you figure this dumb shit out, player. Let's go. But it's not
really
good, and I have no interest in actually figuring out what is going on in this dumb storyline.
I will say this much. I had the same issue with Bayonetta 1. They have that weird storytelling mechanic where some of the stuff is animated and some of the stuff is like a weird graphic comic type
thing. It's kind of like an animatic.
Yeah. And it, there's no rhyme or reason, because sometimes you'll have like an animated one and then they'll just cut away and then it's like stills with people talking and stuff. It's like
the most aggravating thing about those is they do these animatic things sometimes with cutscenes that actually would have involved action. I want to see that in motion. When you guys are talking, I don't give a shit. If it was like, okay, if they made the animatic ones, the ones where they are just talking to each other, that would be amazing, because then I could just easily skip them and just want the animated ones when the action is happening. But this way, oh.
I will also say, I do have the fact that a lot of games, when you do the really insane, stupid, crazy stuff, it's usually in cutscenes. This game actually, like, a lot of that stuff you actually do in the game, like, usually it's context sensitive, but you do get a lot of powerful looking attacks. Especially dependent on your weapon equipped and your weaves.
Yeah, that's true. And they have some really fun animations, especially like while using weapon, you kind of summon demons and stuff like that.
Yes, or if you're using certain costumes, you can summon Bowser.
Yeah,
the King of Koopas.
Yeah, or you can play as Fox.
Yes, but to kind of elaborate on my... This is completely a game where the story serves no purpose other than to give you a reason to be in a certain place. It's like, okay, we're going to hell. It's, how do we get to hell? We'll have her do these random nonsense, and we'll try to explain it to her. Because I think I just finished Chapter 10. I have no idea what's going on. I know there's a left eye of death. Darkness and a right eye of light, and
they never explain what those are. I have no fucking clue why they are significant and what they do. I just know the bad guy wants them.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I got as well, and I don't need it, because apparently the bad guy can also be Yoki. It's really weird. Like, it's just like a bunch of gangs who just keep on showing up to each other every so often.
Oh, another thing I love is that the story set up at the beginning has nothing to do with the story in the end. It's basically just a coincidence that's happening so that Bayonetta can meet that other guy.
Yeah, I mean, I like I said, it's a story that literally serves to get you to your next set piece. And I'm okay with that, because the set pieces are amazing.
Yeah.
Some of the early boss battles would have been climaxes in a lot of other games.
Yeah,
and it's just like, oh, this is the first thing you fight, and this is the second thing you fight. I'm up to, I think I just started fighting the giant fire spider. I'm up to some new enemies, and maybe you know how to deal with them. I just asked about this on Twitter. They turn you into a kid, and it's like, if they get you as a kid, it's a one-hit KO, which I'm not a fan of.
Yeah.
Is there a way to change back, or is it just like you wait?
No idea. I died to them once, and then I never got turned into a kid again, because I'm that awesome.
Well, I did that. I earned that lesson, but then I went to another one and I had to fight two at a time, and that was a pain in the ass.
Yeah, I just got really good at dodging, so it never happened to me again. Yes. So I can tell you.
Fancy us. I'll work on my dodging then. This is also the same thing they did. I'm sure they do it. Like, you have the witch time, but you also can equip your dodge with other mechanics. Like, I have the badge, so like if I dodge when she's about to take damage, you also negate that. And I guess there's also an artifact you can buy that it will automatically go to witch time when she's about to be hit.
Oh yeah, but that magic drains magic, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and nobody.
It was also an item in the first Bayonetta.
Yeah.
An option? I don't quite remember.
It's an add-on.
Yeah.
Or
I think in the first game it was an option or the easier difficulty. I'm not sure.
Okay. Real quick, have you tried Tag Climax?
Yeah, a little bit. It's okay.
I think it's enjoyable, but it's I think it's one of those things you... It's a nice way to kind of grind for money.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, it's just... But playing with someone else is kind of just incidental. It's just... It doesn't really factor into anything you are doing.
Oh, no, not at all. Other than the fact that I think you get more points if you beat them in the overall competition.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's a fun little diversion though, and as an added mode, I don't. It's not like they're advertising this as an online co-op thing. It's just like, oh, if you want to do something fun.
Yep, exactly. But yeah, really good game. And the other thing I've been playing is Door Kickers on the PC, or Mac, or I think also Linux, whatever you have. And that game is fucking amazing. It basically is the Rainbow Six planning modes, but turned into a pausable real-time strategy game, top-down, and it's super fun. They have all the options you want. You can do all the waypoints you need, so you can enter the buildings and rescue hostages and stuff. You can, like... decide how they enter rooms by throwing flashbangs or plan charges on the doors and all that kind of stuff. You level up your guys so they get better at doing things. You can unlock new weapons and better equipment.
And there's tons of equipment. I was watching the giant bomb quickly.
And different classes. You can also unlock different classes, so you don't not only have assault teams, but also breachers, which are specialists with shotguns that can just shoot open doors instead of having to lockpick them and stuff like that. They're also actually a stealth class, which is kind of cool if you want to do like silent approach during missions. And that game has an incredible amount of content. It comes with, like, I think 78 one-off missions?
Jesus.
Or something like that. And it has 3 campaigns. And all that, I think it's a game for $20. I could not recommend this more on this game. It's quite amazing. I've been playing right now for 8 hours or something, according to Steam. I'm still not through the single missions or through all the campaign. So, this is really good. And it came as quite a surprise. I heard about this game before, but now actually playing it, it's amazing. Yeah. Also, it supports Steam Workshop and has a level editor. So, right off the bat, there are already, like, tons of mods and new maps and all kinds of crazy stuff right from the get-go. So, if all the maps that are coming with the game are not good enough for you, there are already more than enough to download, or you can create your own ones. And there are also lots of cool mods, like sound mods, which make the weapons sound cooler, and or, of course, someone made the Rainbow Six 2 music into a mod, so you can... You know, relive the old days and stuff like that. Yeah, it's an amazing game. And this will probably be way up on my Game of the Year list, I can already tell.
Actually, I might look into Door Kickers because I was really into Frozen Synapse when that game came out.
Oh, I like this way more than Frozen Synapse, to be honest.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Frozen Synapse was cool, but the simultaneous turn selection basically kind of fucked me up a lot. I guess it's not really made for me, and this is just, imagine, like I said, the Rainbow Six planning mode, but with pausable real-time action like Baldur's Gate, basically.
Yeah.
And that makes it just really satisfying. On the other hand, Frozen Symes, I think, is a better, Dockyard doesn't have multiplayer, but Frozen Symes, I think, is a great competitive game, on the other hand. Not a great single-player game.
Does Frozen Synapse have the better soundtrack? I'm going to have to kill you if you say no, by the way.
No, it does have a better soundtrack, you're right.
But you can get the Rainbow Six 2 soundtrack.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess that's one thing.
Yeah.
Anything else?
No, that's it.
Okay. Jason, have you been playing anything?
Most recently, I've been digging into Shadow of Mordor. I don't know if you guys have talked about that on the podcast yet.
I have. It's really good.
Yeah. So I won't get too much into it since it sounds like you guys covered it, but what other people had described it to me before is like Assassin's Creed meets the Batman Arkham games set in Mordor. That's pretty much what the game is. It took me a couple hours to get into, but once I got over that hump, like, it is a really cool world. I really like how they incorporate, you dying into the kind of orc hierarchy and stuff. And, yeah, I don't know. The kind of Lord of the Rings skin is the least interesting part about it. Like, I couldn't really care where the game's set, what the ties to the book/movies are, you know.
It takes place in between, like, the start of...
It takes place in between The Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
But it's, like, disconnected from all of that, right? As far as, like, the core story goes.
For the most part, but there are things that tie into the greater... Lord of the Rings kind of narrative. Not in a way that I guess, well, at least as far as I've gone, that, you know, anything that happens in those is portrayed as a result of what happens in the game, but just like important figures in the lore are also important figures in the game, if that makes sense. But yeah, like I said, that's the least interesting part for me. Like, the story is kind of meh. Talion, the main character, is meh.
Yep.
I don't know. It's all right. The star of the show is definitely the gameplay in this one, which is fine. But
I said it before. The story is kind of uninteresting. The great thing is playing with the Nemesis system. I just would like you to tell me if you would agree. I think they should not have locked abilities behind story content, I think. Because some of those abilities are really cool, and they would have enabled you to fuck around with the Nemesis system in more interesting ways earlier, I think.
Are you thinking of a specific one, or...?
Like the branding.
Oh, yes. The branding is...
It unlocks,
right.
I think, like the third to last story mission or something.
It unlocked, well, I don't know, I'm playing in kind of a weird order. It seems like it unlocked halfway through for me.
Huh.
Because it unlocks when you kind of open up the rest of the world.
Nah, it took a couple of missions there, though, but maybe it's because I first did the hunting missions or something.
Oh, that might be. I pretty much, actually, a friend told me that I should play the story missions first to get all the powers and
yeah.
then do the other stuff, so maybe that's why.
If I had known that earlier, maybe my experience would have been different, but I still just think maybe they should not have locked these abilities in the way they have.
Yeah. I wouldn't disagree with that. But, I don't know, it's... So part of me is kind of feeling like I almost wish it wasn't a Lord of the Rings game, but, like, the context of... Or just being in Mordor and having, like, unlimited orcs to kill is kind of cool. They make it look really cool. And, yeah.
Well, from what we heard, I said this earlier, at some point this wasn't a Lord of the Rings game.
Yeah, and it feels that way. It feels like they came up with the systems first and then looked for a brand to tie to it. I don't know. It is what it is. It's a fun game. But other than Shadow of Mordor, I've been making my way through Transistor in chunks. And Transistor is probably the most beautiful game I've ever played in terms of how it looks and sounds. It's just, I'm constantly pausing to take screenshots or just listen or just look around the environments. And it's just, I mean, I can't profess my love for that game's art style enough.
That's what Supergiant are best at, admittedly. I'm not a fan of their gameplay, but they are very good at just making a world that you want to be in all the time.
Yeah. I will say I missed Bastion. I never got around to playing that. It's in my backlog. But for Transistor, I actually do like the gameplay system a lot. So basically, for anyone who hasn't played it, like as you go through the game, you unlock all these abilities, and any single ability can either be equipped as an attack, can augment any other attack, or be equipped as a passive ability. And each of those three things, it'll do something slightly different in each of those three things. So, for example, maybe if it's an attack, you have a ranged attack. If you use it to augment one, maybe it increases the range of another attack. And if it's passive, I don't know, maybe it makes you like invulnerable to the range attacks or something like that. But I thought that was really cool, and it allows for like a lot of kind of an open-ended, like customize it however you want kind of thing. They do a really bad job of explaining it though, because it took me several hours to really get a grip on it. And I also like how you can kind of choose whether to play it real time or turn based, and I find myself kind of going back and forth between the two. I'm still not really sure what's happening in the story, but like the world's so beautiful to be in, I don't find myself caring, and I'm having enough fun with the systems that it's just pulling me through.
Fair enough. That's that.
Yeah.
Okay. Just real quick, I already talked about Bayonetta 2 and Martin. I attended something called New York's Games Forum this week, which is kind of like an independent New York City indie developer conference where they kind of display their games and you get to play test them for a night. Just off the back, I am so over pixel art.
You say this all the time, though.
because I'm going through the list of games I saw, and like I'm trying to match them up, and I'm like, a lot of these games just kind of blur together in my head because they all kind of look the same. When you go through and pay, I paid like a dozen and a half games, so a lot of them just kind of blur together. And I'm like, part of it's because none of them look that different. It all kind of looks like they're made in Unity with pixel art. And I'm like, I get why it's cheap, but you should have some type of sense of difference with it. That, and a lot of them were kind of mobile games, which I don't hate. But again, it kind of came into the tap the screen. There's a fast game called something Bison, where you kind of set your power and then you just kind of hit the guy fly and then you can tap and stuff like that. I saw a couple of those. There's a few others that, again, just don't stand out. It seems that the next big thing for indie games, from what I saw at this show, is kind of like that Towerfall thing where it's like the 4-to-8-player kind of arena.
Couch co-op stuff.
Yeah. I saw 3 or 4 of those games. I will be completely honest with you, though. I thought they were a ton of fun, so I'm all for it. There's one, and I'm sorry, I do not remember a lot of these names because, like I said, a lot of them just kind of throw together. But I think this one was called Skyhook, and you basically have a grappling hook, and you use it as both a way to traverse and to attack people. So in order for you to kill somebody, you have to hit them with the butt end of your grappling hook, and you can also attach it to walls to kind of climb up to different areas and stuff like that. It was really fun. It had sprites, not necessarily pixel art, so it also looked great. I would say I think it's partially broken, though. Some of the stages you can get, like, a battleship, and the battleship can pretty much do a ton of damage that you just can't do with the grappling hook. And it has a much further range because it can fly up and down. there was another game I enjoyed, and I am so disappointed in myself that I actually don't remember the name, because I spent like half an hour on it. It's a very simple game. Okay, it's called Zarfot? I don't know, I should probably have asked. And you're basically just like a box that can shoot and set, like, you have like a self-destruct feature, and it's basically just like an arena shooter, but it's so fun. It's two buttons, A's to shoot, B's to, like, kind of do, like, a radius blast. You can press them together for a shield. You can hold down, like, if you're moving and press B, you can do a dash attack. It's really simple, really addictive. It's supposed to be out by the end of the year. It has a ton of, I think he said that it's going to have, like, a map editor and stuff like that. It has several different modes. We tried out Survival, which is, you know, Deathmatch, and we tried out Tug, which is basically a capture the flag, except it's like if you're using a tow truck, you have to pull it behind you, so you can't go too fast or latch off, and you can't really, like, your opponent can come and grab it from you, so it kind of becomes a war of attrition of trying to get it while taking out the people you without going too far ahead of it, which I thought was a really fun little twist on the capture the flag motif, and it does also have capture the flag. And the last game I saw that I enjoyed or stood out to me was called Quat K Ra, which is basically, have any of you ever played Bananagram?
Nope.
Okay. Bananagram is basically word search if you had to create the board in your head. Basically, you can spell words, and then you get pieces, and you have to connect it, and you can keep going as long as you can until you stop or you hit a wall. And this is basically it, but it's set up like a puzzle. So you basically have to find the exit. In order to get to the exit, you have to build words until you can find where the exit is. And you don't know where it is because the board's blank until you start building words, and then as you build words, it expands. If you kind of get stuck, you can go back, but of course, if you go to, you know, you can only go back so far. I thought it was a really interesting game. I've always been a fan of word games. And, you know, there aren't a ton of great single-player word games, which makes me sound like a huge nerd. But yeah, I thought this was one of the more original and fun games on the Stadia, and I would be checking this out when it comes out as well. I also, just kind of as a general overall of the show, I thought it was a great idea. It was held in a really nice building. I guess Microsoft has a headquarters up in Times Square. It's a really nice building. There was like 40-some-odd games. You know, there were people who were testing it on the big screen, people who were testing it on their smartphone, people who were testing it on their tablet. So, you know, there's a wide swath of different types of games. You had games, you know, that are going to be on Steam, Greenlight, Android, iOS, Wii U, PSN, Xbox.
Everything.
Yeah. It's, you know, so it's a wide range of different types of games and stuff like that. And it is a nice way to kind of get to know the indie scene in this particular city, because I honestly don't know who creates games in New York City, because most of the big publishers aren't here anymore. I think Take-Two is the only one that sticks around, or Rockstar. But yeah, it's
well,
a fun...
it's so expensive, too.
Yeah, yeah. I don't make the rules, but yes.
Well, to mention, if you're going to be in a city, if you're going to have your headquarters in a city, it would probably be Seattle, because that's where everyone else is.
Well, actually, a lot of people are kind of in Silicon Valley, like San Diego.
Yeah, San Francisco, LA.
Washington, places like that.
Basically, you want to stay on the West Coast if you're into the technological aspect. I mean, we've kind of branched out a bit. I think Austin's become a big spot now.
Yeah.
And Boston's kind of getting up there. But, again, Boston kind of has the luxury of New York without the price of New York. But other than that, most people stay to the West Coast. But, yeah, it is a great thing. Apparently, it's a monthly thing, so maybe I'll check it out and see how the game progresses and stuff like that. And it's also kind of nice to kind of play games with a bunch of random strangers. Like, there was a co-op game I went through with this one dude. We played for, like, half an hour. And he was one of those people who's really animated when he plays video games. I realized while I was playing it, based on what I've heard, I don't really have a game face. Like, my I'm enjoying this face is the same as I hate this face. So it's really hard to kind of read if I'm enjoying your game or not. So I do apologize for anybody who thought that. But yeah, I'll also write up more on this because I have other thoughts. But we have a show to finish, and I guess we're going to go to news. And the big news that we missed last week was that Microsoft has given the Xbox One a temporary price cut. And I'm going to use temporary in quotes because I assume this is going to become permanent.
Yeah, they're just going to say, oh, the Xbox One price cut was so successful, we're lowering it permanently.
Yeah,
it just
pretty
seems
much.
Like it would be hard to go back.
Yeah.
Like, if your consumers are used to looking at it at a certain price, they're like, well, I'm not going to pay $50 more when I could have gotten it for that much.
Exactly.
That's at least how I think as a consumer. So,
well,
because
you just go, oh, I'll just wait until it's that price again.
Exactly. That's how a lot of people would think. It's like, oh, they're going to do this deal at the end of the year. I'll wait until then.
Is that just in the U.S., by the way? Do you guys get that in
it's
Europe?
It's just in the U.S.
Just the U.S.
Mm.
But we have a weekend price cut on the PS4. Until it's just for the weekend.
And that's just the U.K.
Yeah, the U.K., which is just ridiculous.
You folks
that's
should be American.
Because I feel like the U.S. is Xbox's strongest market.
Probably why it's the one they want to salvage.
Well, the thing is the U.S. is also the market where it's going to have the most features. Because it's Microsoft
true.
We're talking about. So...
Yeah.
I said on Twitter, this is another example of how Microsoft focuses just on the U.S. and the U.S. alone. And Europe is just, hey, incidental in a way. Hopefully we'll make it there.
Yeah.
But... not this way, isn't Microsoft.
Well, I assume part of it is probably they think they have a stronger lineup for America. Because, I mean, Sony's pretty ingrained in Europe right now, and they probably think it's not worth combating them. I mean,
yeah, but it's not going to help them if they are not starting to fight in some way.
Well, I assume their thing is, again, I mean, there is no doubt that they focus on America. America was and is their biggest market. It was the biggest market for the 360. It sold half of the 360s worldwide, I believe, North America. So I kind of get that. But, yeah, I think me and Jason had this discussion. I can't imagine how much money Microsoft has spent trying to save this Xbox One over the past year. Between $150 price cuts and so on, getting rid of these divisions they created, like Xbox Entertainment, buying Tomb Raider exclusive for a window, Titanfall exclusive for a window, the NFL deal, which I don't even think matters anymore. Doesn't PlayStation have that now, or is that not a thing yet?
There's a DirecTV Sunday Ticket app for PlayStation, but that's it. It's not quite the bells and whistles.
I've never used it, so I have no idea. But yeah, they've just, I mean, I guess they can do it because they have the money, but it's insane to think about how much they sunk into it over the past, it's not even been a full year yet. Just trying to save face. And as a consumer, I'm extremely happy for that. I am pretty close to pulling the trigger on an Xbox One. I guess we should say, even though the price cut was announced last week, it actually doesn't go into effect until, as of today, tomorrow, which is Sunday the 2nd, and...
By the time this podcast goes
out. Yeah, by the time this podcast... Which has been really weird, because a lot of people have had, you know, a lot of people were jumping in on this Sunset Overdrive bundle, and it's been... Most stores will price match eventually, because I think... I mean, if you're smart, you have like a rule about if you have a month, you can price correct an item in the States. Most people don't know that, and most people don't do it. So most places will, if you bought it already, they will price match it come Sunday. Some places have just sold the price from the get-go because it's a week of dead sales that they probably don't want, and they don't want the customer confusion. If you are in the market for an Xbox One, just off the top of my head, I know Kmart has a deal where you buy an Xbox One for $350 and you get 6,000 points back, which is basically $60 in Kmart cash. What I'm looking at right now is Best Buy, I think, October 8th, which is next Saturday. November 8th, I should say. if you buy Xbox One, you get a year of Xbox Live Gold for free.
Oh, by the way, apparently, if you buy Sunset Overdrive on disc, you get 3 months of Live.
Oh, I thought you were going to say... I don't know, this doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason to this, but apparently if you bought the Sunset Overdrive Xbox One bundle, some people have gotten tokens to get Rise for free as well.
Oh, what?
Yeah. So I don't know.
I haven't heard that. That's
yeah,
cool.
there were some people saying it last night. So, like I said, Microsoft does seem to really, really want this system to take off in North America. It sucks.
I mean, the Assassin's Creed bundle is crazy, because if you think about it, it's It's the console that was shipping a year ago for $500 and no games is now $350 with two games.
And one's brand new.
One's brand new. So that's a pretty astounding value.
Except then you have to get Assassin's Creed.
And that's the downside.
Well, you could sell to code. It does suck. It does suck that it is kind of a...
Well, I mean, if you're... Yeah, presumably, you'd be getting that bundle, you know, if Assassin's Creed interested you.
Or you can sell it. I mean, I'm sure it would make a decent profit as well. you can sell it on eBay and stuff like that. But yes, it's a very aggressive move for them for the next... It goes until, I think, January 3rd, so it goes until the start of the new year. But I do expect that to be extended permanently because, like Jason said, it's really hard to kind of go back after selling it.
That's a long time to have a price cut.
Yeah, exactly. If you want to do it, you do it for a week or so. 2 months, especially during this time of year when everybody's focused on it, it's hard to go back and say, oh, now it's $400 again. You missed out, sucker.
And even if you do, people just go, I'm not going to buy it then.
Yeah, and that's the problem you run into.
I'm very curious to see what kind of impact that it has on sales, especially compared to PS4. I mean, obviously it's going to bump sales. I mean more in terms of will it push it over PS4 month to month, which hasn't happened in the States yet, except for 1 month last year when the PS4 was out of stock.
Yeah, I think that's December. And it's gonna be interesting to see because it's also November, so it's going to be hard to kind of account what is a traditional holiday bump as far as like, oh, it's the holidays, people buy more systems then, versus what is people buying it because it's $350 now. So it's going to, I mean, it's a great time to do it. But we shall see. And I'm surprised.
I mean, I think what we'll see is if it sells more than PS4 does over the same period.
I was going to say...
That's where we would see what the sales bump is.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was surprised that Sony hasn't kind of announced anything to combat it, but I guess technically, one, they don't have to, and two, they can't really afford to. Just real quick, I think their financials came out this week, and they've lost $1.2 billion in the first half of this year. Not Sony.
And that's going to carry on for a while still.
Not the PlayStation division, but Sony overall.
Yeah, the PlayStation division is the division that's doing fine.
Woo! Yeah, but if the rest of the companies need the money, you can't really borrow from them.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's why Microsoft works, because Microsoft, the Xbox is a dead division, but the rest of them do really well. So they're like, okay, we can borrow money.
It's still profitable, I believe, right? Yeah.
I was about to say, have you ever seen the profit margins for the video game consoles versus the rest of the... For both Sony and Microsoft? It's like a really tiny sliver compared to what the rest of their...
No. I know what you're saying. You're like, for Microsoft, it's not... It's on the lower end of in terms of how much of the overall company's revenue it's bringing in. But it's still in the black, right? It's not losing money.
Oh, I haven't... I actually haven't paid attention to their financials because it's never Microsoft financials isn't fun because they make money hand over fist. It's not. It's just like you know in the division.
No, the is they spend a lot of time talking about operating systems and Office and stuff like
productivity.
Because
that's where their
all
money.
All this fun stuff,
boring software.
But again, it is where their money is, though. I mean, there's a reason they're multi-billion.
Sure.
Company, but yeah, it's really kind of, it's just like people just kind of get it for their shipment numbers, and that was one of the other things. I think in the first 6 months, Sony has shipped more than, I believe the statement was that Sony has shipped more in the last 6 months than Nintendo and Microsoft has sold since the launch of their consoles. Just to kind of put that in perspective.
It's crazy.
Yeah, the PlayStation division does really well. The rest of the Sony division, I guess kind of on the note of Nintendo, they also announced that they will be doing pre-ordering for their consoles and the 3DS next year, and it's going to start with Super Smash Bros. For the Wii U.
So you
gotta say,
buy all that hot digital content on Nintendo consoles without account system. Or enough space.
Or they just take forever to fucking download anyway.
Oh, the Wii U isn't as bad as the 3DS when it comes to download speed. I'm still going digital on my Wii U until the end of the year because I still get 10% back, which is a great feature. I hope they do extend. But yeah, it's nice. I mean, it also helps with these long downloads. Bayonetta 2, I think, was something like 15 gigs, and Bayonetta 1 was like 12 gigs. So if you could download that ahead of time and be able to play it at midnight, which is one of the things they do better than Sony and Microsoft, is they actually have a window when these games hit, and it always hits on time.
What do you mean?
No, because Sony does it like it does it midnight Pacific, so for us it's 3 a.m. That doesn't serve
It depends on the game.
And that's another thing. Well, I won't even get into PlayStation scheduling with their PSN. I hate the fact they don't have a set time yet. I guess on the same note with Smash Brothers, they also pushed up the release date of European version to November 28th.
Now what they need to do is push up the release dates of everything else in Europe.
What else is far behind?
Oh, not far behind, but there's Captain Toad. We have to wait a week for Pokemon for no fucking reason.
Oh, I honestly think it's because we have a very detailed calendar for our end of the year. You want stuff out before Black Friday, where they can wait a week for you folks. I know it sucks, but it is kind of true because you want that first shipment and you
Well, the worst thing is not only that, is I have a pre-ordered a digital copy of Pokemon. There is nothing for Nintendo to make.
Oh, well, I mean,
the delay. It's just ridiculous.
Digital has always been that. Digital's weird because no matter what, everybody's going to succumb to retail and they don't want it out. Because if retailers get wind of that, then they're going to stop stocking your games, which they already kind of do. It's why nobody does early.
The Master Chief Collection's been on my Xbox for a week and a half, and I have to wait another week and a half to play it.
Yeah, but in Europe, it is so bad, right, that we have companies like Deep Fucking Silver who delay PC games that aren't even getting a retail release. Saints Row 4, we had to wait 2 days, we had to wait until the Friday of that week to get it on PC, and it doesn't even have a physical release, ever. Stupid. I hate it. Annoying.
Them retailers, I mean, it's going to be that way until online, as far as like online retailers completely take over that market. Until then, brick and mortar is still a way for a lot of people to discover these things, and nobody's going to want to piss them off. On that same note, I think you folks also finally got Shin Megami Tensei 4 this week, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. My own boy.
Oh, yeah, year and a half eight.
going back to Nintendo really quick on the preloading. I for one, will give them props. I think this is happening way sooner than any of us ever thought it would. I mean, but this and being what they added, what, like a month ago, being able to buy things from the web?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, in the U.S.
Oh, is that a U.S. only feature?
It's a U.S.
Well,
only thing.
Sorry,
because
guys,
Nintendo and are useless.
They still have work to do. But
well, of course
the
they
fact
have,
of the matter, they're usually so far behind on anything online related, and at least now, like, this is coming in the same year that Xbox only got preloading. I think Destiny was the first game that did it, so.
Yeah, yeah.
They have work to do still, but, you know, it's a step in the right direction.
And we need to get our region unlocking patches for our consoles.
Yeah, that is just weird.
Well, it seems like they did comment on that during their financial statement.
Well, they were just like, oh, yeah, we'll look at it. That's not helpful, just fucking do it.
Well, I assume they probably don't have a system in place right now to do it, or they probably don't. I mean, again, it kind of comes down to not wanting to piss off retailers. Comes down to not wanting to piss off retailers. It's a really, really handicapped relationship for retailers, especially if you're Nintendo right now. They can't really afford to piss off people who do continue to stock their console, which is doing really poorly. I guess on that note, they actually made money for once in, what, 3 years? Or
they didn't.
They turned a profit.
They didn't.
Yeah, they did.
They
for the
didn't.
Quarter.
No, they didn't. They made a loss of 215 million yen.
No.
And there was a guy who was saying that everybody was reporting that they haven't made a profit when they didn't.
No, they made
a
profit.
They lost 215 million yen.
They made a profit for the quarter. They're down overall for the half of the year.
Oh. So they're still losing money.
Well, no, they're not losing money. They've lost money. there's a difference. They're not, like, it's like if you owe somebody $10 and you paid them $5, you're not losing $5. It means that you're still
you
down
are.
$5. No, you're still down $5. So yeah, but that doesn't mean you're losing money. It means that you...
Semantics.
But basically, they made money for the quarter. They're still down overall for the year. There's still two quarters to go, and this is the big one, so we'll see how that goes. Especially with how people are kind of reacting to the downgrade for Amiibos. Yes.
Well, they're going to get a Wii U sale out of me, so... there's that.
Okay, speaking of dead, you folks were debating this. I don't know where you folks ended up. Where is Prey 2? Is it
dead
or is it not
dead?
It's dead.
It was a game that we believed in, but we never felt that it got where it needed to be. That is not a case of we moved it over to a different studio.
Yeah.
That is, this game is dead as a doornail.
It's no longer in development. That's the phrase.
It wasn't up to our quality standard, and we decided to cancel it. It's no longer in development. That wasn't an easy decision, but it's one that won't surprise many folks, given that we hadn't been talking about it. It is dead. Rest in peace, Prey 2. You were the best game that I never got to play.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, because it had so much buzz. Was it E3 that they revealed it that one year? And then
E3 2011.
Yeah, and then there was that whole thing with the studio demanding a raise or whatever it was, and then obviously it was moved to Arcane, and just... It's kind of funny, given the history of the first game. Like, I wouldn't be surprised to see Prey 2 come out in 10 years or something.
I said this, well, when the original game was announced, I mean, even if it looked interesting, the IP of Prey, despite whatever Bethesda has been thinking, has zero value.
Yep.
So, even if they want to go back to that concept, I don't think it's going to be called Prey.
That's a
good
point.
Holy crap, yeah. The first Prey was announced in fucking 1995. I was 3 years old then. Jesus.
That makes me feel old.
And it only came out 11 years later.
Yep. I read PC magazines when the original Prey was announced.
And for some of you who don't know what a magazine is, it's stuff that we used to get in the mail.
It's like a newspaper, because those still exist. It's like a newspaper, but they use glossy paper,
and
it was all about one subject.
And just to date it even more, it was running on the Quake 2 engine. Okay?
I'm kind of curious what's going to happen to Human Head, though.
Well, they released a game not too long ago on Steam.
Yes, but isn't it weird?
That it was a game that TimeGate were working on before Gearbox got them killed.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
That's not a great resume.
And it's published by Atari, of all people, so...
That's going to be a real hit.
Yeah, it's called Minimum. It doesn't look terribly great from what I can tell, but... You know, I just saw the fact that it still had free-to-play elements because it was going to be a free-to-play game. And I was like, yeah, no thanks.
Huh. I just thought Human Head was closed when they took Prey 2 away from it, but...
No,
it's another line. I wonder, there is a question, though, like, obviously Arcane is coming off Dishonored before this, trying to salvage this. So if they're no longer working on Prey 2, that now begs the question, what are they working on?
Sonic 2, probably.
Well, probably, yeah. But
I think Sonic 2 was announced. Or are we still pretending that game doesn't exist?
I think we're pretending it doesn't exist.
Okay. I honestly, the way people talked about it, I assumed that it had been announced long ago.
No.
Well, it's one of those cases that the game sold well enough and reviewed well enough to warrant a sequel, just no one wants to talk about a sequel. So
there was no reason
pretty much a given that it's going to be a sequel. Since everyone loves franchises, right? So
franchises. Speaking of franchising, EA is going back to bat. They tried this last gen with Medal of Honor and Battlefield. to alternate between first-person shooter brands. So this time around, they're going with Battlefield, which works, and Star Wars, which is a known quantity, with Battlefront.
Did you just say that Battlefield works?
Okay. Just to clarify, when I mean works, I mean it's a brand that sells, not that it's a brand you can actually say.
Okay. Good.
That's an important distinction in
yeah.
this case.
Yeah.
I was talking about it from a business standpoint, not a consumer standpoint. But yes, because I mean.
Although the funny thing is, with Hardline being delayed to next year, they're still going to have Battlefields in back-to-back years.
Yeah, I think they announced it for March.
Calendar years, at least.
I think they announced a release date for that. But yeah, it's weird because you end up, because of Battlefield being pushed out of this year, you end up with Battlefield at the start of the year and then Battlefront at the end of next year. But you also get Battlefield, I guess, 5?
5?
I don't know.
5.
5. At the, they announced that for the fall of 2016. So by then, they should probably get the Battlefield 4.
Can't wait to not be interested in it whatsoever.
Yep.
Also, so much for Battlefield not being annualized, because, well, let's be honest, Battlefront will just be Battlefield reskinned.
Well, it doesn't matter what they do, because if they released Hardline this year, then they would have had, like, it would have been annualized, and if they're releasing it next year, which is what they are doing, it's going to be annualized. So the only way that you can not make Battlefield annualized at this point is to just cancel Hardline, and they're not going to do that, it's way too far in for that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So.
I mean, my comment was more even ignoring Hardline. If Hardline had made this year.
EA has been trying to go annually for a long time, and they do annually with a first person shooter franchise anyway. By God, they do it enough on everything else. they've been trying to do it just to kick Activision off the top seat, whereas Activision are doing that themselves, so, you know.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. EA is going to try and make it work for as long as they can.
Well, I mean, they want it to work. They have to get it to work for a first time, because Medal of Honor kind of tanked hardcore with that strategy as well.
Well, both of them, yeah.
Yeah, both of them.
Yeah, and.
But then it doesn't help if you make shitty games.
Well, yeah. I mean, it helps, because it's the most profitable years yet so far, but...
Well, yeah, but I mean, like if you want an annual thing to be successful, you need to make good games all the time, and I shit on Call of Duty all the time, but they're at least, like, from an objective point of view, they're for the most part, bug-free, and they have high production values, and, you know...
Most of their content
is sufficiently
good. By the game.
Quality-wise, they're more consistent, I would say.
That too.
And I think part of that is because even though it's annualized, they do have alternating teams, which is what EA is trying to do with this.
Well, they were trying to do that with Medal of Honor too.
I think the other big difference is it's totally different, because I mean, Battlefield and Medal of Honor pretty much serve the same audience and the same graphical style and the same war. Like, I used for Battlefront, Star Wars.
I think Medal of Honor also suffered from, like, a lack of identity. I mean, they tried to do their own thing, but then they had, like, with whatever their engine was, but then they tried to use the Frostbite engine to do multiplayer, which was... it was just so disjointed.
Well, that's what I was saying. Yeah. The first Medal of Honor, after they rebooted it, Medal of Honor 2010, DICE made multiplayer for that, because it was on Frostbite, and then they were just like, screw it, we'll move the entire game over to Frostbite, and then you ended up not being able to tell the difference between the two. So yeah, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, at least, I mean, Star Wars, even if it's, you know, mechanically very similar, like,
it's a Star Wars game,
aesthetically it's going to be completely different, so.
There are going to be people out there that buy it because it's a Star Wars game.
Yeah,
I might.
I probably will, most likely.
I won't, because it's not the Battlefront 3 that I want, which is the one that got cancelled by LucasArts.
Well, sounded cool, but we're never going to get that.
No, because Free Radical doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, that's to say, you also probably don't want to talk about the canceled LucasArts games, especially these past 2 weeks when they want to show new ones. I tell you, starting to piss people off. On happier news, Sony announced what's going to be playable at the PlayStation Experience event in about a month.
Woo! And which I may or may not be at.
Appearance.
Huh?
Playable, or the games are going to make an appearance, because that's a very big distinction.
I believe everything on the list is playable. I think. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Most of the stuff on this, I wouldn't be surprised, because a lot of it is out.
Yeah, but I think the big thing is Uncharted 4 playable or not?
I could see it being
playable. I don't believe Uncharted 4 is on the list, is it?
It is.
Well, it was. It people is. Made a fanfare about it.
I don't think Uncharted will be playable. I would not be surprised to see all the other things playable.
Well, didn't they have a playable... How far in advance did they have a playable version of The Last of Us? I thought that was way in advance, too.
The thing is, of course, they probably have a demo ready that they are willing to show us, but are they willing to have a demo that they will let everyone else play?
Okay, that's...
I don't know.
I think that's an important distinction, yeah.
Okay. I hope that the Order 1886 has a new demo, because it seems like every other week somebody's talking about the demo that apparently is from February. And I get why people get upset that people always criticize it, but at the same time, it's up to Sony and Rad to not show the same demo for the entire year.
It's not a good demo. Anyway.
No, it's not a good demo, but everybody writes about it.
I play it. It's not a good demo.
But every time
Only thing I would say is that game is getting pretty close to release.
Yes, it's out in February.
How many resources would you want to dedicate to a new demo?
Yeah, of course.
Right before release.
That makes sense, still.
But it depends, because right now...
It's all we have to go on, right? So we can only criticize that.
Yeah,
so if they don't want to be criticized for that, then they should have shown something else.
And I was at
E3, and that line... was the longest line in the entire convention.
Yeah, still, I
yeah, but if everybody
thought it was terrible, and
yeah, that's the thing. You can have
also,
it online, but if people come away with a negative impression of it, that's not a good thing.
That's also the impression was overwhelmingly positive.
Okay,
at E3 at least.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of almost every major site has written about this, and they've come away disappointed with it, and that kind of seeps through. I mean, I haven't played it. What I saw of it kind of as well. But it would be nice to have a new demo. I understand at crunch time you probably don't want to dedicate somebody to carving out time to do one. But it is kind of getting to the point. Because I think there was just an article this past week from either Eurogamer or somebody talking about it as well. And it was the same kind of this isn't a fun game. And I don't mean fun as in, woo, it's Mario. I mean, people just don't seem to be connecting with it as much as Sony wants them to. Everything else on this list doesn't seem that surprising. Destiny's already out. Bloodborne's out in February. Mortal Kombat's out.
It's all stuff that's coming out
in the first 6 months.
Next year, yeah. So.
But they also already told us that there will be new stuff. Surprises.
Well, will there be news? Is this going to be... Does this have a conference component to it or an event?
I suspect there will probably be announcement trailers of games that will be coming out beyond the first quarter.
Yeah, because it's also on a... It's also on a Friday, I believe, which is also
a
tradition.
It's Saturday and Sunday.
Oh, okay. But they said it was December 5th. What is December 5th?
6th and 7th.
So I wonder if maybe they'll have the VGAs that Friday, and then all these new games we announced last night.
I believe the VGAs are the week before. The weekend before.
Wait, that was announced?
Yeah, I was going to ask that question. Has it been announced?
Okay, we're not going to get Jason in any more trouble.
I don't know. I don't know anything about BGS, so I'm just reading this Polygon article that says the PlayStation Experience event takes place the weekend after Spike is expected to hold its annual Video Games Awards show.
Yeah, I wonder where Polygon has it from. I have not heard that.
No.
Yeah, because I was actually wondering. Yeah, I'm Google searching right now. I'm not seeing anything official, so.
Think they would announce it if it's at the end of this month. We are in November now. It's 4 weeks away then. But yes, it's Saji. I think Jason's going, but he's going in a different capacity. So yeah, and I guess kind of to wrap up for this week, we have the Call of Duty Hive Action Trilogy and the announcement, quote-unquote announcement, of Zombies. Has everything for this game leaked early?
Pretty much.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, define leak.
But I mean,
it hasn't come out of a PR mouth hole.
Yeah,
this was a leak because
it's been taken down
from someone who played the game early and just this is basically their surprise thing after you finish the campaign.
Oh, so they're actually trying to get people to play the campaigns now.
I thought they had
this surprise game thing for every campaign since the first Modern Warfare.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't remember them. Oh, well.
I don't remember that in Modern Warfare.
Modern Warfare had the Mile High thing.
Oh, yeah.
And the Modern Warfare 2 had the museum thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then the Treyarch game.
It was actually since World at War, because that was the one that did the zombies first.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. True.
Okay. So, is there anything else you folks want to talk about? Oh. Just, this is mostly for Americans, but it's always a great thing to know. Starting this Sunday, November 9th, Target is going to have a buy two, get one free sale on all video games, on all platforms, on all devices. So, it's a great time. It's right after, if you want, you can wait on Call of Duty, which is actually out this Tuesday.
Yep.
It's
too bad that it's before Far Cry comes out, though.
Is it also before Assassin's Creed, or is Assassin's Creed out that week?
I think Assassin's Creed's out the 11th, so that should count.
It's okay. It's the same week as Halo Master Chief Collection, which is one of the games I might look into buying. It's November. It's the first. It's a perfect time as far as releases go. If you haven't bought anything recently, you know, Bayonetta is out on the market. Shadow of the Mordor is there. Assassin's Creed
Rogue. It's
before Pokemon and Smash Bros. Is Wii U, so that kind of sucks. But, you know, if
Nintendo!
You
Nintendo! God damn you.
I wish we could get deals like that over here.
Yeah.
Before Little Big Planet usually and before when they Grand do,
usually when they do this buy to get one deals over here, it's just old titles, not new titles as well.
Well, if you're in the UK, you don't get them at all.
Well, like I said, this is one that I've been holding out on a ton of games this fall because we usually get them. This one's actually really late in the year, but I'm actually happy for it because the later it is, the more games you have an option of buying from. Like I want to go back and buy Hyrule Warriors. I'm looking into Destinies, maybe Shadow of Mordor. There's a ton of great games. I want to pick up some handheld games. I want to get Smash 3DS. I want to get Tamagotchi Life. I want to get Fantasy Life. So there's a ton of great games there, and it's a great time. If you aren't into that as much, I think Best Buy is also having a buy one, get 50% off on 3DS games that week. And Dotted Donuts...
before Pokemon comes out, though.
Dotted Donuts, Amazon will most likely price match this deal as well, because they tend to always price match it. So yes, if you're in America, and I think this also extends to Canada, so for our Canadian listeners as well, deal works.
But Black Friday week's only 3 weeks away, which I assume everyone will have more sales.
Oh yeah, I mean, and the great thing about Black Friday nowadays, again, sorry for our European listeners, is that a lot of people do their deals way in advance, so you can kind of plan for that as well. Like, we should start probably getting deals this week from circuits and stuff like that, so you can see who's having what for, like, $20-$25 or something like that. Because
I need to know whether I need to wait to get a Wii U or if I can just get one now.
Well, you're getting it from GameStop, right?
Yeah.
Okay, because right now somebody has it for $270, but you want it specifically from one retail source. Yeah, so if you look through ads, Xbox One is on sale. They are still doing, there's the Assassin's Creed bundle. Wii U has three holiday bundles, I believe. One is Walmart exclusive. You can get either Mario Kart and Nintendo Land, you can get Super Mario 3D World and Nintendo Land, or you can get What is the third one? It's okay, whatever. You have one with Mario Kart, you have one with Mario 3D World. Those are the two you need to know about.
Yeah, what do you want?
Is there a third one?
there is a third one. I don't remember what it is.
It's probably like Hyrule Warriors or something.
No, I think it might be. I think it might still be this new Super Mario Brothers U, new Super Luigi U, Bundu.
Oh, yeah, that is the other one.
When is Black Friday exactly? Because usually Amazon here in Germany also has like a Black Friday week. So
yeah, that's what we do too. It's November 28th.
Yes,
it's the day after the week of nowadays of our Thanksgiving.
Let's be honest, it's the month of now. There are people who are literally doing a Black November now.
Oh yeah, I'm just asking for my sake, so I know.
Yeah,
when
Monday the 24th.
I need to look at Amazon over here. So
Amazon,
they will do the week deal thing here.
Yeah,
well, that's a nice thing, you guys.
Yeah, that's the only retailer I know of, or website, that does something like that here.
Yeah,
and I guess that's only because they're a huge American company.
Yeah.
I was also going to say, they tend to focus most of their stuff on November 28th, the Friday after Thanksgiving. They tend to they sprinkle out those throughout the week, but like their main focus is on that. And maybe we should have a show on this later on. The other thing to watch out with Amazon is that they have their daily deals, which are really hard to get into because they announce them way in advance and everybody tends to watch them. So a lot of the good deals get sold out in like a minute.
Yep.
So yes, if you are a cheap-ass gamer, not subject to the site too much, even though that is really relative when it comes to this stuff like this.
It is a nice website.
It is a fantastic website. Well, I don't like how it looks. I don't like how it seems on that website.
Functionally speaking.
Yeah. That does remind me, just in case, if you are in the market for an Xbox One and you live in the United States and it's already $350, you can also go to your local post office and they have what they call a mover's guide, and it comes with a 10% off coupon for Best Buy, which would knock the Xbox One down to, I believe, $325. Which is...
Wow.
Another great, you know, little incentive. And it's free for anybody. You just go to the post office. You can ask them or somebody that might have it out. I got mine today in preparation. And the coupon's good most of this month. I think it goes up to November 22nd. And then it skips Black Friday week. And then it goes through the start of next year, through February, I believe. So, again, even if you don't want an Xbox One, it's still a great thing to have. 10% off is always a good thing. So yes, now that we saved you money or get you to spend more, for Daniel, Jason, Martin, and myself, this has been Dual Wielding episode 159. Tomorrow's mind. You are welcome.